that everybody can see them.
And it's not just the students. A walk through the halls at the Native Media event, attendees have a variety of smart devices.
Eve Byron. I have an iPhone. I get my work emails, Facebook and Twitter. I'm lost without it. It literally, because I also use the GPS.
My name is Toya Honore. It's a Samsung Galaxy. Mostly looking at Facebook, texting, looking at email, talking on a phone.
My name is Brutus Baez from KWSO, Warm Springs, Oregon. I have a cell phone. It's a smartphone. It's not the old school flip phone. Keep in touch with people, and I use my phone to do interviews.
My name is Brandon McGill from KOHN. Radio, just my smartphone, iPad. Other than social media, I like the voice memo app. Doesn't take up much space.
Veteran Native journalists remember news gathering the old school way, from dark rooms to tape recorders. Choban News editor Lori Edmoseppa has been a journalist for more than 30 years.
Now, you know, everything's digital. You know, our printer's 90 miles away. All of our pages are sent via PDF through an FTP site. You know, we don't ever do anything printed out other than proofing. And even that, you know, we can view our PDFs online, on our computers.
Edmoseppa says drawbacks with technology in the newsroom include keeping up with the latest advances and associated costs. The conference ends Sunday. The leadership of an Alaska Native corporation is promising a return to profits after some heavy losses. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports.
Anthony Malott took the CEO reins at Sea Alaska Corporation's annual meeting in late June. He was promoted to the post after 8 years as the company's treasurer and chief investment officer. He takes over as the Native-owned corporation looks for new areas of investment. It's focusing on Southeast Alaska or the Pacific Northwest, where most of its 22,000 shareholders live.
We've looked at the sustainable food industry. We've looked pretty in-depth into the fisheries landscape to see where we may fit. And we've also looked into government contracting.
The search comes as Sea Alaska recovers from last year's $57 million loss in operations. The corporation also has a new board chairman. Joe Nelson heads what's being called a new majority on the 13-member panel.
We need to invest in areas that we care about. We need to invest in areas that we're able to be passionate about and we want to be the best in.
Nelson and Malott are about 20 years younger than their predecessors, but they're no strangers to corporate management. Nelson's been on the board for 11 years, and Malott's father, Byron, was CEO in the 1980s and early 1990s. For National Native News, this is Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation, with funding from ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
National Native News brings you information from around Indian Country and the world. To do this, we rely on financial support from organizations like yours. Find out how to reach our listeners while also supporting this program by visiting nativenews.net.
Not voting is not rebelling. It's surrendering. Your voice counts when you vote. First, you have to register. Find out more at nativevote.org. Brought to you by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
It's just 7 minutes and 18 seconds after 3 o'clock. You're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. Pat Moore, your host today for Juneau Afternoon, and my first guest is here to tell us about Wushkanadie's Open Mic and Poetry Slam. It's going to be held this evening at 6:30, but it's out at Hawk Rec, so it's kind of a different venue for the Poetry Slam. Hi, Bill.
Hi, how are you?
Oh, I'm pretty good. Say something in poetry.
Say something in poetry. Wow. Throw the gauntlet down right away, right?
Yeah, right. Wow.
How about if I just talk about our event?
How about if you do that?
I can
but
do
you
that.
Have to rhyme everything.
Oh, iambic pentameter. I can
yeah,
do that.
There you go.
This is the we are having a poetry slam, open mic poetry slam tonight at Hawk Rec. It's our monthly event. Typically,
you're actually going to have a mic.
We probably won't. We're at the big shelter out there at
Okay, so it's an open table.
Yeah, it'll be...
Stand up on the table.
Yeah, it'll be... People need to project, put it that way.
Okay, good.
Because you may have rain and you may have... Well, we'll definitely have a fire going and all that out there. And then we'll be cooking up... we'll be barbecuing as well. So we did this last July. It's kind of become an annual event in July to just invite people out, invite the community out, meet the people, meet the poets, meet the community, and have some food.
Mm-hmm. So you did this last year. What kind of crowd showed up?
We had, I want to say, 30, 35 people out there last year. It was it was a pretty good showing. I mean, the shelter fills up pretty quickly.
Yeah.
It was a little chilly, so we had a good fire going.
Yeah, and those fireplaces out there are wonderful for two reasons. One is they'll keep you warm, but the other is they really generate fellowship.
They do. Everybody. They do. And it puts in a nice twist, a little ambiance twist out there. You know, we don't get out in the elements too much to do our events, but we're looking forward to tonight. We're hoping some people come out.
Yeah, yeah. This is also kind of a, I guess, bittersweet evening as well.
One of our board members, the vice president, actually, of the Wishkanate Board of Directors in June, her name is Jackie Boucher. And she's been with us for several years now, and she's just been such an instrumental, fundamental part of our organization. She does a lot of the heavy lifting, a lot of the communicating, a lot of the correspondence, a lot of the fundraising. She's also a terrific poet in her own right. She has been accepted to grad school for Michigan. So she's going to be leaving, I want to say, in the next 10 days or so.
Grad school in literature?
In spoken word, actually.
Yeah,
I believe
wonderful.
Is what she's going to be pursuing. So, and she's very good at it now. I can't wait to hear her when she comes back.
Yeah.
But she's going to be co-hosting the event tonight with the board president, Christy Nami Erickson.
Uh-huh.
So they always play off each other very well. It should be very, very exciting. Very, very, very much looking forward to it tonight.
Right. And you're serving food.
We are. Yeah, we'll be cooking some hamburgers, hot dogs, and we have some vegetarian hamburgers as well.
And the food is at 5:30.
Yeah, we're going to start about 5:30. I'm going to be out there about 5. We'll get the fire started, and then we'll start preparing the food. And hopefully we'll have people to feed at 5:30, and then we'll have the sign-ups for the open mic at 6. And then we'll start the event at 6:30.
6:30, and then probably be over like a couple hours?
Yeah, depending upon how much participation we get, it could go 8:30, 9 o'clock.
Yeah,
So, and it's, an alcohol-free event. So, again, the whole community's invited. Kids are more than welcome. Poets of all ages. We'd love to get new faces out there.
Well, you can do a lot worse than go out and sit in front of a fire and listen to some people deliver the spoken word.
It could be contemplative. Who knows what you're going to get. We have a lot of poets who bring a lot of different styles to these events.
Mm-hmm.
And typically we have somebody we have never seen or heard from before who pops up and just blows us all away. So...
Bill, could you characterize a style of poetry for me? When you said that, I'm wondering what you mean.
Well, we run the gamut. Some of us tend toward more of a nature poetry, contemplative type of work.
Okay.
Some folks are more emotive, more personally emotive. You get some people who really go on political rants. I mean, it just runs the whole gamut. We have a particular poet, David Parrish, who's another real good voice here in Juneau, who brings a rhyming poetry to the event.
Mm-hmm.
And he's very good at that. And he always brings 3 new poems every month. He's just amazing that he can, put out this work.
Mm.
Male, female, kids, older folks. We've had teachers, librarians. We've had people who, deliver freight out of trucks. We have the whole gamut of the community. It's always interesting. You never know quite what you're going to get.
What's your process?
My process, it's more of a contemplative, solitary process.
Okay, so
I'm not one of those.
You go off somewhere and...
I tend to, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah. Okay. For me, it's...
Like outdoors? Or?
Yeah, for me, it's more about either, sitting by the river, watching it rise, maybe, today.
Yeah.
Given the state of natural events going on right now, who knows what we're going to find.
Don't sit too close.
right. Well, we'll be on the beach, so we'll be back a little ways.
Yeah, we're telling people to stay back from the banks.
Definitely. But that's my method, my preferred way of figuring out poetry is either, just go for a walk in the woods or sit by the river, or sometimes you wake up at 2 a.m. and scribble something down and just kind of build on that. My style is not the emotive, political, which has a lot of value, and I really appreciate people who do that well.
Uh-huh.
It's just not the way I tend to express what I'm feeling. So
once the inspiration has hit, once the sitting on the riverbank has caused this idea to germinate,
mm-hmm.
then is there a lot of editing involved? Do you write it out and then rewrite it and change it?
Yes.
Or does it come?
For me personally,
yeah.
The editing process never really ends.
Okay.
I mean, I could read what could be seen as the same poem four or five different ways, depending upon how I'm feeling at the time. Yeah, I'm always going in and revising. I think a lot of people do.
Do you save your originals?
Some.
You stack them up on top of each other, I'm wondering.
Yeah. Some, not all.
Yeah.
Sometimes they just end up, in a fire, and you kind of cleanse yourself that way, right?
Yeah.
And you start again.
Every once in a while we read about a famous artist painting over something because he couldn't get canvas enough,
mm-hmm.
and like that. I think there was just recently the discovery of a painting underneath mm-hmm. someone's
mm-hmm.
painting. And
I
saving your old poetry would be kind of analogous.
We go back, I'll go back and revisit that. One of the projects that we've done over the last year and a half, 2 years, is get two poets together and
mm-hmm.
just kind of write poems back and forth to each other and kind of build that into a poem.
Ah.
And that's been a lot of fun because
uh-huh.
then you take your work that maybe you're not satisfied with and you build it onto somebody else's work and it totally changes where you want it to go. So that's a lot of fun.
Huh.
There's a poet in town, Daniel Kantak. He and I did a lot of that. He'd sit at his house, I'd sit at my house, and we'd get online. He gives me six stanzas, I give him six stanzas, and we just kind of bounce it back and forth. So
huh.
a lot of fun. You never know where it's going to go.
Yeah.
Or when it's done, either. That's the other part
the
of
other
it.
The other thing. And now we're back to the editing.
Yes.
Okay, so one more time. The event tonight starts at 5:30 with the service of some decent potluck barbecue,
mm-hmm.
et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
And then at 6 o'clock, there's going to be a sign-up to read if you want to. And at 6:30, Wush Kanadier will do an open mic without the microphone.
Right.
And Poetry Slam starting at 6:30, and that will last probably a couple hours, depending on participation.
Yeah, we'll have two sign-up sheets, one for the open mic, one for the competitive portion, the mm-hmm. slam part. And we'll see how many folks sign up. Typically, we have room for 8 on each sign-up sheet. We'll do the open mic first. And then we'll take a break, and then we'll go to the slam.
And this is all taking place at Aukrek.
The large shelter at Aukrek.
So come out the road past the ferry terminal and
mm-hmm.
turn in at the first left past the apartment houses there.
The large shelter. I don't know how many
actually,
other folks will be out there, so we may be the only bunch of cars that you'll see. But,
okay.
Come find us.
All right, yeah. Once you go down any of the steps or anything like that, you can just walk up and down the beach
just
until you find the right shelter.
You'll find us, yes.
Yeah, okay, good. Okay, hey, Bill, thank you so much for all of the work that you do to keep Wush Kanadier alive and well and still kicking in the community. And thanks for coming by and telling us about the event.
Thank you much. We couldn't do it without the help of the K2 stations.
Thank you.
This is Bird Note. In the blink of an eye, a bird of prey plummets to the ground, pinning an unwary mouse. A moment later, it flies off, clasping its prey in its feet. A familiar drama we expect of a hawk or falcon, or after dark, an owl. But this bird of prey is a songbird, a bit smaller even than a robin. It's a loggerhead shrike. Silver-gray with black wings and a vivid black mask across the eyes, shrikes look like bandits. This impression's reinforced by the shrike's large head and hooked bill. Male shrikes are well known for impaling their prey on thorns, creating a larder that may help impress potential mates with their hunting prowess. Loggerhead shrikes are found across much of the United States in open country, like pasture and sagebrush. But pesticides and the loss of habitat to residential and commercial uses have reduced shrike populations. Conservation efforts are underway, such as allowing brush to grow along fence lines and leaving small trees and shrubs on the roadside. Reducing or eliminating the use of pesticides can also help sustain this tough customer among the songbirds. To learn more, come to our website, birdnote.org. Today's show brought to you by the Lufkin Family Foundation. I'm Michael Stein.
And tying right into Bird Note, the Saturday hike for July 12th will be joining the Audubon Plant and Bird Walk. Tram riders meet at the lower building at 8:30 in the morning. You need $7 cash for the tram ticket. The hikers will meet at the Basin Road Trailhead at 8 a.m. Groups will join at the upper tram building around 9, and depending on weather, they'll hike partway up the mountain after the bird walk. They ask that you wear waterproof hiking or rubber boots and bring ice cleats, warm layers of clothing, and plenty of food and water. No dogs or firearms, please. So that's the Saturday Juneau Parks and Recreation hike that's coming up tomorrow. Right now, I'm going to introduce my second guest, who is coming to us by way of Sitka and the telephone. So let's see if the technology works here. Carolyn Servet, are you with us?
I am.
Well, wonderful. About 50-50 on the telephone, so I'm really glad you answered as neatly as you did.
Well,
Carolyn is
too.
The executive director of a thing called the Island Institute, and she's going to tell us a little bit about the Sitka Symposium. Carolyn, I don't know how many of our listeners know what the Island Institute is. Could you clarify what that is?
Well, we're a small nonprofit organization in Sitka. We have been doing literary programs since 1984, and they tie to our interest in community well-being. So we have this interesting mix of work that we do that involves writers but also involves notions of community resilience and trying to foster that in various ways. And that includes our Sitka Symposium, which is coming up in about a week.
Community resilience is a complex term.
It is.
Can you kind of break it out a little bit for us and tell me what you mean by community resilience?
Well, I imagine a resilient community to be one that is has the capacity to adapt to change, that has a lot of internal knowledge and talent and capacity to take care of itself. But the adaptive capacity is the main thing I think of with resilience. And when we're talking about community resilience most recently, we're thinking of ways in which take Sitka as a small island community that is dependent on resources, many things from outside of our town. Our food comes largely from outside of Sitka. Heating, fuel, all these sorts of things that we depend on completely from sources beyond our control. Imagining in the event that something were to happen that would influence that or change that, or what would Sitkins do to respond? How would we be able to carry on without some of those things, or some event that might happen that would be something that would be completely beyond our control.
This conversation you're having has a much wider application than just Sitka.
Absolutely.
We're in the same exact situation up here in Juneau, and I think every community along the archipelago is aware of the fact that if the barge is late, then your supermarket shelves look like the apocalypse had hit.
Exactly.
Yeah. So,
exactly. So, I mean, those are sort of the tangible examples. But I think there's something to be said for building capacity for resilience into a community even before the catastrophe or the barge, you know, delay, whatever. I think there's something to be said for coming to know what resources are already within the community, for being able to rely on those resources. Even just identifying them, I think, is a really important thing. Learning what local knowledge there already is, chances are we have a lot of what we need already right here. One of the classic examples that's going on in Sitka right now to me is the revitalization of the Sheldon Jackson campus. You know, the college closed in 2007. The campus was turned over to the Sitka Fine Arts Camp in 2011. And the camp has just reached out to the community to help restore this national landmark, 100-year-old buildings that were in disrepair. And what they found is that we have the talent that we need right here to go about that work. And it's been a phenomenal thing to watch the community outpouring and the number of volunteers that have come out to help do exactly that. And it's all been local. It's been pretty fabulous to see.
Now, the Sitkin Symposium is actually an ongoing discussion process that generates this knowledge about how the community can become more resilient. What is the event that's coming up specifically?
Well, the symposium is a week-long conference, and this one is on the theme Radical Imagining, Changing the Story with Stories of Change. It's all about this notion of resilience that we've just been talking about. Changing the main story, or some of the stories that have brought us to some of the difficult places where we are as a culture and as a country, and then some of the global challenges that we face right now, I think are based on some stories that are, if you think of the word story in terms of underlying assumptions or the narrative that goes within a democracy or within capitalism or within some of these structures that we rely on and have for many, many years, some of the assumptions behind those, I think, are getting us to the problematic places where we are with climate change, with the political, I would say, corruption by money, for example, some of the environmental problems that we're up against besides climate change, some of the social injustices. So we're looking at, when we say changing the story with stories of change, we're looking for examples of people who have initiated constructive projects, programs, businesses in their own communities that point toward a way of social change and changing some of the basic assumptions that don't really create such a healthy society as we need to have. So, and if you start looking around the country, we found anyway, there's lots and lots of examples of people doing exactly that. And so what we're suggesting is that from the bottom up, people do have the capacity to make this kind of change happen. It's all about that creative, adaptive capacity that is part of resilience. And so we're wanting to celebrate that, and to find those examples and to encourage people by showing them that these possibilities are out there, and to really nurture the sort of excitement and the sense of empowerment that individual people, local people at a community level such as Sitka or Juneau or other places in Alaska or beyond as well, but that there is the possibility for individuals to feel like they can do things rather than feeling helpless or powerless or despondent in the face of some of the big challenges that I think we as a culture and the world itself and globally we're up against.
Carolyn, most of the events will happen on the former Sheldon Jackson campus, right?
That's correct, yep.
And what are the dates?
The 20th to the 26th. So we start next, a week from Sunday. The kickoff event is actually a TEDx event. I don't know if you're familiar with TED Talks and TEDx, but we're hosting a TEDx event that evening, and several of the symposium faculty, our guest speakers, will be talking that night, and then the symposium itself actually starts the following morning.
Who are those primary speakers at the symposium?
The primary speakers, it's a fabulous group. There are four. Winona LaDuc, who is a Native American activist and environmentalist, probably one of the most influential Native American leaders in the country, I think, is going to be here. Luis Alberto Urrea, who is a Latino writer. He's born in Tijuana, grew up in the U.S., but he comes from a dual heritage, Mexican and American, and he deals a lot with border issues and immigration issues and is a novelist, essayist, poet, award-winning writer. Then Alan Wiseman, who is a science journalist, best-selling science journalist. He did a book called The World Without Us, Imagining the Planet Without without Human Beings, and then a new book called Countdown that puts us right back on the planet where we are and imagines how we can help move things ahead through population issues.
Mm-hmm.
And then one other person, Molly Sturgis, who is not a writer but a composer and performer and a woman engaged in art activism in community. She lives in Santa Fe and is part of a artist collective called Little Globe, and they do amazing work throughout the community using the arts to help people in hospice care, help people with cancer. They've done work with women, veterans coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan. They've done a fun project putting opera on a bus line in Santa Fe so that there are opera performers singing, and as the bus goes along, there are corresponding people on the at the bus stops on the street, and just really creative sort of work. Her most recent project is one called Coal, which is a musical about coal, about energy questions, and tries to engage people in that whole climate conversation.
I'm salivating over the wonderful opportunity here, and I'm wondering now, if I can't get away from Juno, how am I going to take part in this symposium?
Well, that's harder. Harder to say. If you could get away from Juno for a day or two, you could take part in, there's a lot of individual events that are open to people who don't have time to take in the whole thing.
Will there be an online presence at all, other than the TEDx event?
I think there will eventually, but not in real time, not as things are going on. Mm-hmm. I think we'll be able to post things later on as the symposium wraps up and we have some documentation that we can post. But I don't know that we have a way to make it live, except to have people attend, which is frustrating, I realize. But
I'm already slightly frustrated. This is, here on Juno Afternoon, over the last couple of years, we've done a series of 15-minute programlets about community sustainability, and so this is something that I'd love to be able to attend, because it's right down the aisle, right down the avenue that we were taking those things, looking at our own resources and trying to look positively at what Juno, how Juno can help itself sustain.
Well, I hope that, I hope that there will be resources on the website post-symposium, but I don't know of any way we can broadcast it live. If there is such a way, we will certainly let people know, and that would be posted on our website. I have to just say right now, unfortunately, just about half an hour ago, we discovered our website is down.
Yes, I noticed.
So we're working on that. We have people working on restoring it for us, but it's going to likely be a couple days before it's back up again.
Okay.
So, but people should still keep an eye on that in case there are opportunities to pick up any of this live.
Carolyn, in the interim, if someone is interested in maybe finding a program or something like that, is there any other sort of resource? Are you printed anywhere, or can people call a telephone number and get a breakdown?
Well, they can certainly call. 747-3794 is the Island Institute office number, and we're happy to provide that. I can email a copy of the schedule over to you folks.
I'll see if we can put it on the event calendar.
Okay.
It's a Juno event calendar, but I think we may have space.
Well, and so we'll the out. Other place that it, that we'll be posting it, we don't have all of the individual events yet, but that's a task for the next few hours, actually, on the on the community calendar of our public radio station, kcaw.org.
Okay, so people could go to the KCAW
website
perhaps this evening or something like that and see the symposium.
Yeah.
Okay, excellent. Well, thank you so much for telling us about this.
You're welcome.
Oh, is there a charge for attending?
Yes, there is. I mean, the full registration fee is $425. That takes in all of the events of the symposium and TEDx and basically you get the whole package for that.
Uh-huh.
If people can't attend the whole thing, then individual events have their own admission fees.
Okay. And those are probably going to be posted with the events themselves.
Exactly.
Okay, excellent. 20 through 26 July starts off with the TEDx event. Most of the events will occur on the former Sheldon Jackson campus. Whole thing is in Sitka. This is called the Sitka Symposium, being operated by the Island Institute. We've been talking with Carolyn Servant, who is Executive Director of the Island Institute. Carolyn, thank you so much for, first of all, organizing this great event and all of the work that I'm sure you must have put into putting it all together. And thank you for telling us about it.
I'm so happy to have the chance to. Thank you for getting me on the show.
You bet.
Okay, thanks.
Bye-bye. Bye now. This is KTOO News in Juneau.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday. It's the 11th of July, 2014. 1960, on this date, To Kill a Mockingbird was published. Harper Lee, she'd started writing anecdotes about life in Alabama. When she moved to New York City, 1949, things were not coming together. She got frustrated. She threw her manuscript out the window of her apartment, and then she thought better of it and went and retrieved the pages. She dismantled what she had written. She turned it into the book that would go on to win the Pulitzer Prize for Fiction in 1961. The novel has sold more than 30 million copies, and that has made her hometown of Monroeville, Alabama, very, very popular for tourists. Her father's courthouse has been turned into a mockingbird museum, gift shop. There are restaurants named after the book and its characters, and the town has staged a play based on the book every year, the first act presented in the town square, and then everyone troops inside the courthouse for the second act. It's the birthday of E.B. White, born in Mount Vernon, New York, 1899. E.B. White, who said, "I arise in the morning torn between a desire to improve the world and a desire to enjoy the world. This makes it hard to plan the day." It's the birthday of Harold Bloom, the critic, born in New York City, 1930, to Jewish immigrants. His first language was Yiddish, but he fell in love with English poetry even before he had ever heard English spoken aloud. Harold Bloom, a critic who argues that great literature is a product of genius, that we shouldn't read it to understand history or politics or culture, but to understand the human condition. It's the birthday of the artist who painted his own mother, James Abbott McNeil Whistler, born Lowell, Massachusetts, 1834. He was ready to paint one day, but the model did not show up, and so he decided to paint his mother instead, the painting called Arrangement in Gray and Black, Number 1, a portrait of Anna Matilda McNeil Whistler in a black dress, in profile, against a gray wall. Whistler's mother. Here's a poem for today by Joyce Sutphen, The Last Perfect Season. No one knew it then, but that was the last perfect season, the last time sky and earth were so balanced that when we walked we flew, the last time we could pick a crate of strawberries every morning in June, the last time the mystical threshing machine appeared at the edge of the field, dividing the oats from the chaff, time of hollyhocks and sprinklers, white clouds over a tin roof. Everyone we knew was young then. Our mothers wore dresses the color of dove wings, slim at the waist, skirts flaring just enough to let the folds drape slightly, like the elegant suits our fathers wore, shirts so white they dazzled even the grainy eye of the camera when we looked down into the viewfinder to press the button that would keep us there, as if we already knew that this was as good as it was ever going to get. A poem by Joyce Sutphen, The Last Perfect Season, from Afterwords, published by Red Dragonfly Press, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, offering poetry podcasts to listen to and thousands of poems to read at poetryfoundation.org, and by the Mosaic Foundation of Rita and Peter Hayden, based in Ann Arbor, honoring the literary arts and the universe of great ideas. Produced by Joy Biles, with assistance by Teresa Burgess. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
It's about 22 minutes before 4 o'clock. I want to repeat this thing that I opened the show with because it's extremely important. We're having a flood situation here in Juneau. The CBJ has closed View Drive and all of the roads leading into Meander Way from River Court Drive to Kilowich Avenue along Riverside Drive. Now, at this point, it's a voluntary closure at this time. I drove down Riverside on my way to the show today, and there are guards at each one of the closed intersections, but they are allowing cars to go in and out. They're just doing an advisory thing. However, they're asking that non-essential persons stay out of that area, and these roads are expected that they could become impassable if the flooding from high water on the Mendenhall Lake and River comes up over the ends of the roads. If that happens, then power will probably be shut off to isolated areas that are affected by floodwater. The Brotherhood Bridge Trail, of course, is closed, the one that goes along the side of Mendenhall River, so and that includes the pedestrian bridge, so that's not in use right now. And they ask that you do not walk or drive through flooded areas. They're also asking that people stay away from the banks of the Mendenhall River. Those banks are unstable. They could easily give way, and the water is moving really fast in the river right now. Please do not stop or stand on the bridges to take photographs. And I noticed on the Back Loop Road that they have now posted a fire engine on each or a fire truck on one end and a police car on the other, and they have cones out and tape, and there are folks out there discouraging people from going out on the bridge to take pictures of the river. It's spectacular, but this is not the time to get those photos. Local agencies are monitoring the situation. They'll continue to provide updates to us. They're saying that persons living anywhere along that river corridor should think about having personal plans for flooding and be prepared. And they also say that everyone in Juneau should, regardless of location, have a personal go bag of emergency supplies ready to go. To learn more about preparedness, you can go to http://readyalaska.gov. There's a wonderful sequence of events for building yourself up a safe go bag in the event of any kind of emergency. Well worth spending a little time on. There are hydrographs for Mendenhall Lake. Those are available at I'm not going to repeat this huge, long website I have here, but essentially if you go to waterweather.gov and follow links, you'll find yourself able to do that. And the National Weather Service has a Mendenhall River hydrograph, and that is at the waterweather.gov site as well. So Mendenhall River flood update. We are in the middle of a little event that involves having Suicide Basin tip itself down and spill all the water into Mendenhall Lake and into the Mendenhall River, and so things have gotten kind of exciting out on the Back Loop Road. Here's an exciting thing I'll tell you right now. Listen to this. Just listen to this, and then we'll talk to these people.
Girl, you're the one. Child, you're the one. And love will come. Drive a car that is clean, and you outrun everyone. Yes, and when I sway this sway, I think if you sway me this way, and when I hold my head, I dream it's you holding my head.
The lady whose voice you're hearing is sitting here in the studio with me, and the guy whose guitar is playing in the background is also here, and isn't that amazing? Hey,
Deering. Thank you.
Deering and Down are in town and going to be playing, two gigs. You got McGivney's tonight, right?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, and then another one Saturday at the Paradise.
That's right, Paradise Cafe.
Yeah.
Thank you for having us.
Hey.
On air. This is exciting.
Well, this is an honor. So you guys got together in Skagway.
That's right. We met in Skagway.
Which is not the musical capital of the known universe, but nonetheless, good town. A lot of fun to hang out over there.
It is indeed.
Yeah, so how was it that you came to find yourselves both at the same time in Skagway and looking for a mutual gig?
Yeah.
You want to do some of the history?
Yeah, go for it, Rev. I'm going to let you take the lead.
I just, it's funny because I think I just finished cutting an album up in the Yukon. And
you guys went to White Horse, or you went to White Horse because that was the only studio that was
around. Yeah, yeah, I cut an album up there called American Friend, and Jerry Sheff, who played bass with Elvis Presley, and Bob Dylan, a session guy who I knew when I was a kid. I still had his number, and I started thinking, you know, man, wouldn't it be cool to see if he'd come up, you know, if this number still works. And I called him up and told him what I had in mind, and he remembered me, and he said, yeah. And we went up to Yukon in the middle of winter, and it was kind of a magical time, obviously. Shortly after, I met Lana. You know, she'd come up to visit her mother, she wanted to collaborate or to jam. You know, she's very young.
It was actually your mom that suggested it, right?
Yeah, she says, hey,
yeah,
my daughter plays and sings guitar, you know, too. You guys should do something together. And
uh-huh. Well, she didn't actually, you know, but she told me that you were
I wasn't there. You know.
But you know, we get jaded, and you know.
Yeah, you had some misgivings, I think.
About this
kid with a guitar, right?
Yeah, I thought, and then I met her, and obviously she's devastatingly beautiful. And I thought, how could she possibly actually sing and play the guitar too? So, I was pleasantly impressed, you know, when I heard her play.
Yeah. And you play rhythm guitar, but somebody said you go a little further than that.
Well, that's nice of someone to say that. I'd probably say that, you know, I'm just kind of the rhythm player. I just hold it down, and Rev gets to do all the cool tones and riffs over top. But, you know, and I'm okay with that. I like playing rhythm and, you know, kind of roll up the bass a little bit on my guitar, and it kind of acts as the lower end and holding down the fort. I like holding down the fort.
And then you did an album, and she basically provided harmony on the album.
Oh, yeah.
Early one in the
2003, that was When a Wrong Turns Right.
Yeah.
We recorded that in Ireland, and it was, that was a magical experience. I'd been talking to an Irish friend of mine about. We talked about that for, almost 30 years, you know, and then, I mean, it actually came to you know, into existence, and that was a miracle in itself. I mean, he organized some great players. He played with Joe Cocker at Woodstock, and he played with McCartney, you know, song with Wings, My Love.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was an incredible thing. I mean, you know, the Irish musicians were going, wow, man, you're doing an album with Henry McCullough. You know, they know who he is over there. I mean, we all have heard him and know who he is here, but they don't know the name.
So just practically everybody starts out in Skagway, then goes to Switzerland and winds up in Ireland recording an album. I mean, that's just real common.
Yeah. I love it.
You want to, like, talk about how that all came about?
Well, Lana and I were actually ran into some Swiss folks that were very excited about the album that we'd recorded in the Yukon, Coupe de Villa, and they saw us in Dawson City. We were playing up there at, I think it was Oddfellas Hall, and they came up to us, really nice folks, and wanted to know if we'd autograph the album. You know, it was really sweet, and we thought, God, how do these Swiss people know about us?
Anyway, yeah.
And they invited us to come to Switzerland, and so, well, Switzerland's nice.
Then you weren't doing anything for the Saturday, so.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah,
sounds good.
Let me get my toothbrush. You know?
Yeah.
And, And Switzerland's not exactly super close to Ireland, but it's definitely closer than Alaska.
Yeah, well.
So we thought, wouldn't that be kind of cool to record a couple birds with one phone, so to speak? You know? Mm-hmm. And so, you know what? And I feel sorry for anybody that doesn't believe in a higher power, because, you know, there certainly was helping us out on that adventure. It actually, you know, came to fruition. So it was a pretty good-sized bunny to pull out of the cosmic hat, if you know what I mean.
So after Ireland, then you kind of bopped around the States, tried to live a few different places, and wound up in Memphis.
That's right.
Which is home now, right?
Which is home. I guess home for about, what would you say, 8 years now, Rev?
Yeah.
Say 8 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's been great.
Actually, we first recorded at Sun in 2004, I believe.
Wow.
We went to Sun Studio, and we went on that. We took the tour, you know. I mean, music mecca, right? And afterwards, I said, you know what? We got to record here. Because the first time I looked in that window was 1983, and there was nothing there. It was a closed, abandoned. There was nothing going on in that building. I went, and that's a couple campfires too. But to come back, and I thought, why? You know, I couldn't understand why nothing was going on in this place where all this incredible stuff had happened. You know, and Sam Phillips, of course, moved his business down the street. But anyway, I said, Lana, we have to record in here, and she readily agreed, and so that was a very magical experience. The night we were there recording, Pat, there was a telex, or fax that came in that Bragg,
Johnny Bragg,
the last living member of the prisoners, had passed away. And that Walking in the Rain, you know that beautiful song, where they say that you could actually, people say that you could actually hear their chains. The prisoners, they recorded it. And it's kind of like, I think that Oh Brother, Where Art Thou drew some of that story from that. I mean, you know, which is, it's a pretty good story. But, that was a magical time. Wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Still is magic there.
Billy Swan dropped by the studio. The engineer goes, you know what, you mind if Billy Swan dropped by the studio? Well, that'd be pretty cool, yeah. I can help.
I think one of the reviewers said that you had all of Memphis on your album pretty close.
The album we did with Willie Mitchell.
Yeah.
And Keeney Hodges, who just passed away. God bless him, man. What a wonderful guy. Great musician. You know, he wrote Take Me to the River and co-wrote a lot of, like, Love and Happiness and all. And the guy had a beautiful sense of humor and just a beautiful soul. And we just lost him. But he... You know, we feel very fortunate that he played on a couple tracks on that album. And
I want to get back to Lana for a minute here. So your mom suggested, and how old were you when that, when?
It was like 98, and I want to say, like, I was, what, 17, 18, somewhere in there.
Yeah.
And
so they had to sneak into the places that you were playing,
just kind of.
So I guess what I'm wondering is, and I don't have any recording that goes back that far to find out what your voice sounded like then.
Yeah.
He's been listening to you since you were 16, 17, so now I want to turn back here. Did you kind of watch her voice grow up, or did she come to you that way? I mean, that thing that you've got down in there is like, okay. Yeah.
Thanks.
What was it? Somebody said, whatever it is, she's got it.
Wow.
Yeah, I think one of the folks that saw you singing someplace.
That's nice.
Anyway, so what was it like? I mean, was she all there, or did she kind of grow into it, or what?
Well, I've definitely noticed a lot of, maturing, obviously, if you're not changing, I mean, hopefully we're all changing. It's like, how can you learn anything if you know everything? And, I mean, she's definitely pulled out, grown a lot musically, Yeah, that's obvious, especially when I listen to the old stuff, which I love, definitely, don't you feel like you, I mean, just her style of writing, too, it's like, It's easy to talk about you when you're not in the room.
This is hard, mate.
Well, now, wait a minute. Now I'm going to turn that question around. Now I want to turn the question around.
Yes.
You grow him up?
Well, you know what? Not too much. I mean, Rev's really hard to grow up. I mean, what did your dad say, Rev? It's more like a
drug
up. You
got two choices. You can get drug up or grow up or get drug up.
Yeah. I'd say we've probably done that to each other.
Uh-huh.
But Rev, I think we've really come a long way. And like Rev was saying, like changing and morphing and, we're doing it. And hopefully to do more of it, you know, and push ourselves. And we've kind of, in this last year, I'd say that we've become a little bit of hermits and we haven't played out as much as we normally do in Memphis. And we've just kind of been trying to hone and come up with other sounds. And it's hard to, you know, just do that. It's like you have to almost stop everything you're doing and then just go, hold on a second, and clear a slot of time and just go for it. And we're working on it. Yeah, I wouldn't say that we're there, which is great because that means...
So it's a job all the time.
Yeah,
it really
I'd
is,
say
yeah.
so. But it's, you know, we're fairly relaxed. You know, we're not... Well, we pull our hair out a little bit, but...
I'm trying to relax. It's hard to relax around you. Man.
Yeah, I have a hard time relaxing.
Come on now, come clean here.
So, well, I mean, you know, it's frustrating, but what is it? Boo-hoo, right? No, we're doing good and we're...
So now, do you have a sense of where you want to take it?
Yeah, it'd be great to... there's lots of goals that we've always have had for our music, but I'd say for, this moment in time, we'd really love to get back overseas is like our...
Oh, yeah?
Our biggest call.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I think touring over there would be really great. And not really touring, per se, like more going over there and digging in for a serious amount of time. And, you know, our way, I think, of getting our word out there for Darien Down has always been more on lasting friendships, you know? Like we make friends, and then that friendship leads to another friendship. And those are our fans and our friends and... Those are the people that help us and keep us going. So
there's going to be an opportunity for Juno to make some friends here because you guys are playing at McGivney's tonight.
That's
and
right.
Then tomorrow you're over at the Paradise. Both concerts are what, evening events, 6:30-ish?
That's right.
7,
well, tonight
like
at McGivney's it starts. Music will start at 10.
I
put 9 on the poster just thinking that people might want to get
there.
You
might want to get a seat. Yeah.
Yeah,
if we're during and down, you might want to get there maybe an hour early.
Maybe.
Okay,
or at
yeah.
least
and
you
then
know,
what time's the Paradise kick?
Paradise is at 6:30, door at 6.
And oh, okay. Okay.
A couple hours. Just early. Families, like we wanted family. We have a lot of friends with babies.
Paradise works.
Yeah, we'd like
that,
to see the kiddos. So come on
out. Hey, so during and down in town, let's go out with another cut off that latest piece. This is your new album, right?
It's still kind of in the oven, but these tracks that we're sharing with you are Prentice entities, and they'll be on the album. And I must say, tell you that we've been working with Doug Easley, who's really an incredible. I mean, he played Little League with Alex Chilton, you know, from the Box Tops, and he's a great, really incredible musician and producer as well. And we've been so lucky to work with some really great Memphis people on the last album, obviously, the Mitchell family, and now with Doug and Easley. And that's, anyway, so just to tell you a little bit about Drop His Name, Doug Easley, it's really impressive.
Outstanding. So here they are, Darien Down, they're in town. Go check them out at McGivney's tonight at 10, and get there at 9. And the Paradise Cafe on 6:30 on with the doors opening at 6 on Saturday. Here they
Thank
are.
You.
Honey, drip and drown. You're invited to the Best of UAS open house for prospective and new students. Come check out our brand new residence hall located right on campus. Even if you think you know the University of Alaska Southeast Juneau campus, we guarantee some surprises. Get your questions answered. Learn about admissions, financial aid, housing, and registration. Friday, August 1st, noon to 3 p.m. Check in at the Glacier View Room in the Egan Building. More information on the UAS website or call 796-6000.
Support comes from Valley Medical Care, offering family health care in Juneau since 1982. Valley Medical Care, a proud sponsor of Public Radio in Juneau. Information at 586-2434.
Music in the background is the Empty Oil Barrel Band. They're going to be playing over at Food Truck Friday at the Jack. It starts very shortly here. They're opening up at 4 p.m. with food and vendors, and live music starts at 5:30. Also, Brian Graceland is going to be there, fingerstyle guitar. The Flustered Cluckers are going to be around, Musical Moments. Those are on the 18th. So tonight it's just the Empty Oil Barrel Band and Brian Graceland. So this is an opportunity to get some decent food and then step inside the Jack, get out of the rain, and listen to some good music.
The Otter Mash. They made a great big splash.
They did the mash.
The folks were throwing cash.
They did the mash.
They did the Otter Mash. We're called an Hydrolutris, I heard him say. We're 200...
This is KTOO Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. We also broadcast on translators throughout the area. In the Valley and Auk Bay, you can tune to K276AF at 103.1. Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K269AO at 101.7. Gustavus hears us on K201 AM at 88.1. And K220BT serves Hoonah at 91.9. And in Excursion in Nicey Strait, K210AS 89.9.